recess into public hearings?
So moved.
Motion, Mr. Hudson, second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions? Take a vote, Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. I will say before we get started, you know, Mr. Burton's not here. He had a meeting upstate to attend this afternoon. He will be listening to the audio online. If somebody misses, he can go online, let's do it again. We have the opportunity all the time, either PNZ or council. If you miss a meeting, you can go online, listen to the public record, and you're able to vote, so. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. At this time, I'll read the rules of procedure for zoning hearings. When council holds public hearings on zoning applications, there are legislative hearings because council uses the information obtained during the hearings to decide whether to adopt an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map in the manner requested by the applicant. Sussex County, in its zoning and land use decisions, does not discriminate against persons based on race, color, religion, national origin, disability, familial status, source of income, sex, creed, marital status, age, gender identity, or sexual orientation. Public comments made on the basis of bias and stereotype concerning people within these protected classes will not be taken into consideration by the county in its deliberations. Each application shall be announced. The director will review with council the minutes and testimony from the PNZ hearing, and those minutes will be made part of the record along with any exhibits introduced at the PNZ hearing and any recommendation made by the commission. The applicant will be called on to present and explain their application and present reasons supporting their application. Council may question the applicant and their witnesses. After the applicant has presented their application, council will provide an opportunity for anyone else who favors the application to speak. After that, any persons who oppose or question the application will be allowed to state the reasons for their opposition or questions. There will be no rebuttal by the applicant, and the hearing will be closed unless the council decides to leave the record open for a specific purpose and time period. Further, the applicant will not be allowed to question persons who speak in opposition, and persons who speak in opposition will not be allowed to question the applicant or their witnesses. If you intend to speak, you're required to come to the front, stand at the speaker stand, state your name and home address before you make a statement. Please sign the sheet at the speaker stand. If you represent or speak for a group or organization, please identify who you represent. When you make your statement, please be concise. Do not repeat yourself. If you have a written statement, hand it to me and it will be made part of the record. If there is more than one witness for the applicant or more than one person in opposition, please do not repeat points that a prior speaker has already stated. All persons in attendance should conduct themselves in an orderly fashion. No applause or other disruptive behavior is permitted. If you have a cell phone, pager, beeper, or other telephonic device with you, please take the time now to turn it off or switch it to silent service. At the conclusion of the hearing on each application, council may either approve it, deny it, or defer it to a later date. If the Planning and Zoning Commission has not issued its recommendation report at the time of this hearing, council will defer action on that application. The council in those cases shall accept and consider written comments only from the public on the PNZ Commission's recommendation to County Council for a period of 5 calendar days following the Commission's issuance of its recommendations. This does not preclude the County Council from requesting additional information as otherwise permitted. Mr. President, we have two hearings today, and it's my understanding they're being heard as one, and it's a change of zone 1895 and conditional use 2195. Ms. Cornwell.
Thank you. The change of zone is an ordinance to amend the comprehensive zoning map of Sussex County from an AR1 agricultural residential district to a GR general residential district for a certain parcel of land lying and being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 3.93 acres more or less. The property is lying on the northwest corner of Parker House Road and Muddy Neck Road. The tax parcel is District 134, Map 16, Parcel 382. The 911 address is not available. For the change of zone, the Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing on October 24th. At that time, a number of items were submitted to the record, including exhibit booklets, site plan, agency comments. At that time, They deferred for the consideration at their November 14th public hearing. They did recommend approval for reasons 1 through 7. The conditional use is an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in a GR general residential district for multifamily 45 apartment units to be located in a certain parcel of land lying in being in Baltimore 100, Sussex County, containing 3.93 acres more or less, property lying on the northwest corner of Parker House Road and Muddy Neck Road. The tax parcel is District 134, Map 16, Parcel 382. The 901 address is not available. Again, the Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing October 24th of this year. At that time, again, a number of items were submitted into the record, including agency comments, letters in opposition. They deferred for further consideration at their November 14th meeting. They did recommend approval of the conditional use for reasons 1 through 9 and conditions 10A through O. I would note, since the Planning and Zoning Commission, at the time of the Planning and Zoning Commission, we'd received 817 letters in opposition. As of today, the number in letters in opposition are 1,190. We also have one letter in support of the application. Thank you.
Any questions from council? If not, Mr. Hutt.
Good afternoon, council. Thank you, Mr. Moore and Ms. Cornwell, for introducing the application. For the record, my name is David Hutt, a local attorney here in Georgetown with the law firm of Morris James, representing Gulfstream Development LLC, who is both the owner of the property that is the subject of today's applications, as well as the applicant on both of those applications. With me and sitting in the row immediately behind me, to my right is, and your left, if you're looking at me, is Jeff Clark. He's a registered land use planner with Land Tech Land Planning. And on the opposite side, my left, your right, is the first person is Mr. Bob Harris. He's one of the principals of Gulfstream Development LLC. And sitting next to him is Mike Coben, an engineer with George Miles and Buehr. As you just heard when Ms. Cornwell introduced the application that is the subject of today's public hearings, is a 3.93 acre parcel, which is in the middle of the screen, right where the cursor is, located at just outside the municipal limits of the town of Ocean View. And Ms. Cornwell is highlighting some of the municipal boundaries for the town of Ocean View. And located, as you can see, at the intersection of Muddy Neck Road, which runs from top to bottom on the screen, and then Parker House Road, which sort of tees off or wise off from Muddy Neck Road. As was indicated when the application was introduced, there are two applications and they're being consolidated. The public hearings are for efficiency's sake, so that we don't repeat all of the same information, of course, at the hearings. The first application is change of zone 1895, and this application seeks to change the zoning classification for the majority of the property to GR. The majority of the property is zoned AR1 presently, but there is a small portion that is already zoned GR, and you can see that on the screen. Sort of the little tiny stem there is zoned GR presently, and change of zone application 1895 seeks to change the zoning classification so that the property has one homogeneous zoning classification. The conditional use application, which is conditional use 2195, is a conditional use for multifamily units on that GR with the underlying GR zoning district. Specifically, the request is for 3 buildings containing 45 apartment units, which of course everybody can do the math, but that's 15 units in each of the 3 buildings. As council knows and is familiar with, as it has these meetings on a regular basis, land use is not a popularity contest. As I mentioned at the public hearing before the Planning Commission, one of the difficulties with any form letter, as you know, and as was just read into the record, this application has received quite a bit of written response and attention from the public. But one of the difficulties with those types of petitions is always that As the applicant, as the council, as I said at the Planning Commission, no one knows exactly what information was shared with those individuals that led that individual to sign the document. We heard a little bit at the Planning Commission. There are many of the members who got up and spoke in opposition at the Planning Commission, stated what their individual efforts were to acquire some of those signatures on those letters. But it certainly gives one pause as to what details did that person know? Did they review the application? Did they have an opportunity to look at anything that is in the file, the agency responses that Ms. Cornwell just mentioned a moment ago, the plus response letter, the favorable or the response from the Delaware State Housing Authority, the response from DOT itself to the service level request, all of the substantive items and evidence that gets presented that helps to inform the council when it makes a decision on applications such as those that you're considering this afternoon. Near the end of my presentation, I'm going to go and address certain of the items in that form letter. But before I do that, I mean, one concern that any applicant has, if a person hasn't reviewed those items, is that it's certainly a very popular position these days to just say no to for more development or additional development, or to say any development in an area is going to cause an increase in traffic, or to say that perhaps apartments aren't the right type of development. And again, while those may be popular positions, the substantive record that was presented at Planning Commission, their recommendation, as well as the information in the exhibit notebooks and that you'll hear this afternoon, we think establishes that this is the appropriate area for not only the zoning classification, but for the 45 apartment units that are part of the conditional use application. At the Planning Commission, when I said many of these same things, I noted that I hoped that the members of the public who were there at that time would carefully listen to the presentation, because they might find out more about some of what the agency's comments and responses were. Those hearings and this hearing hopefully will be informative not only for the council but for the public as well, as you get to learn the details of an application and why it was filed and why the change of zone, why the conditional use was sought for that property. I'm a firm believer that it's important to, as people like to say, practice what you preach, and so myself, Mr. Harris, and the other members of our team, we were carefully listening at the Planning Commission hearing when the opposition got up and spoke and stated what some of their concerns were about this application. And there have been two supplemental documents that have been included in the record, again, after listening to the comments about two areas in particular, traffic and stormwater management. There is now a letter in the record from the traffic group, and there is also, you'll hear a little bit more from Mr. Clark in a few minutes regarding stormwater management, additional information that we did not present but was always part of the plan, but we did not know that that was the exact nature of the concern. And again, listen to what we heard at the public hearing before the Planning Commission, and we'll present a little more information and detail about some of those things than occurred at the Planning Commission. As council knows, there's always a great deal of work, thought and effort and consideration that goes into any of the land use applications that appear in front of you. That is certainly no different in this case. Throughout the presentation this afternoon, you're going to hear about several of those considerations. You have the exhibit notebooks in front of you or online, and the support and evidence in those materials are, we believe, what formed the foundation of the Planning Commission's recommendation, and we hope would also form the basis for your decision to approve what the Planning Commission recommended. Several of those considerations that we'll detail in a little bit are, first, just the physical layout of the site itself and the similarity between this project and, when you see the site plan in a few minutes when Mr. Clark walks through it, you'll see the similarity between the layout of this project and Providence, which is the immediately adjacent community. In addition, we took into consideration the service level evaluation response that was received from DelDOT. And if you've taken a chance or had an opportunity to look at that, you'll see that a traffic impact study was not required because the impact for traffic purposes of the proposed 45-unit apartments falls within the defined term that DelDOT uses of a negligible impact. And of course, as council knows, when that occurs, there is no traffic impact study that's required. Another part of the consideration was the response that the applicant received after going to the state planning office, what people typically refer to as the plus response from that office, which specifically states that it has no objection in that response, which is Exhibit 5 or Tab 5 in your notebook, that that office has no objection to the development of the project pursuant to the county's land use code. Within that letter, you will see one of the agencies that the PLUS reaches out to as part of that is the Delaware State Housing Authority. And within the PLUS response letter, you will see that it gives a strong support for this project because it provides another housing opportunity and option in eastern Sussex County, which is something that the comprehensive plan and the Delaware State Housing Authority has been advocating for some time. Probably the last component before I sit down and let Mr. Clark go through some site plan details is the county's comprehensive plan itself. As council is aware, a great deal of time and effort was placed in planning for the future of Sussex County through that document. And I think we call it the 2018 comprehensive plan, but as you know, the governor signed it in 2019. And I will share some of the specific excerpts from that near the end of our presentation, showing how this proposed project matches the goals, purposes, and strategies of that plan, and the goals and strategies of the coastal land use area in which this property lies on the future land use map. With that general introduction, I'm going to ask if Mr. Clark would review some of the site plan specific details of the project for you. And after Mr. Clark's presentation, I will make some closing remarks in summary.
Thank you, David. For the record, my name is Jeff Clark. I'm a Delaware licensed landscape architect, number 148, with the firm of Land Tech Land Planning, situated in Bethany Beach. Using the zoning map that we have before, you see the site is in the center of the white shape. And to the north of the site is a community named Providence. It's situated on land that's currently zoned HR, high density residential. There are seven three-story multifamily buildings immediately adjacent to the proposed Kent apartment site and the Shady Dell GR subdivision. And going then to the south and to the west of the site is a Shady Dell Park. It's a single-family mobile home subdivision consisting of single-wide and double-wide mobile homes, with some stick-built homes interspersed throughout the development on lands that are presently zoned a GR, or general residential. To the east of the site, located across Money Neck Road, is a seasonal produce stand and an older single-family residence on a large rural lot that is presently zoned AR1, and as you can see, most of the properties east of this application are within the town of Ocean View, which on this exhibit are rendered in green. Southeast of the site in pink is the Melson Funeral Home property. It's a commercial funeral home with a large parking lot situated on lands that are presently zoned B1 neighborhood business. So prior to, do we have a copy of the site plan, Janelle? There we go, thank you. Prior to preparing a land use plan for this site, a field investigation was conducted by Mr. Jim McCulley with Watershed Eco. And this investigation found a small section of ephemeral ditch on the western portion of the site, which may be mapped as Waters of the United States by the Army Corps of Engineers. If this is confirmed, a permit will be needed to construct joint drainage way improvements as necessary. Mr. McCulley found no rare, threatened, or endangered species during his field investigation. And again, Mr. McCulley's report is full report is found in the supplemental data book. In the pre-design phase, it was learned that an existing 8-inch Sussex County sanitary sewer lateral has been extended into the property from Mimosa Street within the adjoining Shady Dell subdivision, and the Sussex County Engineering Department has confirmed in writing in the book that there's adequate capacity that exists to accommodate the proposed land use. Also, at the pre-design stage, it was learned that the adequate potable fire and water are potable and fire protection water supplies available to serve the project as designed, and a letter from the Tidewater Utilities Company is enclosed in the supplemental data book. Stated earlier, the land use plan, as you can see on the screen, illustrates three 50 by 150-foot buildings, each three stories high. The building size is well within the multifamily dwelling code requirements, which allows building lengths up to 170 feet. The proposed Kent Apartments multifamily building footprint also is generally in keeping with the neighboring multifamily buildings to the north. Providence residential community buildings are slightly larger at 155 feet in length and are also three stories in height. The Kent Apartments multifamily structures are planned to house 15 units in each building with five separate units per floor. A mixture of two and three bedroom units is planned, and 40% of those apartments will be three bedroom units. State Planning Office noted in their report that the site lies within an investment level two area according to the strategies for state policies and spending maps, and stated they have no objections to the proposed rezoning and development of the property in accordance with county codes and ordinances. Likewise, the State Historic Preservation Office stated in their plus comments that no known archaeological sites or known National Register properties were found to exist on the site. Denrick plus comments, as was stated earlier, certainly encouraged the use of pervious pavements and green stormwater management technologies. The proposed site stormwater management design will employ pervious pavements to avoid the need for open water ponds, typical of the ones found in neighboring developments. Preliminary site-specific soils testing by Hardenkite Geotech Engineers has confirmed that site soils generally consist of sand with some thin layers of silt at varying depths, and based upon soil modeling, seasonal high groundwater is estimated at 2.5 to 3 feet below the existing site surface. The soil types found and depth of groundwater make this site a good candidate for a pervious pavement stormwater management solution. It is likely that stormwater management will not only include pervious pavements with under drains, but also some bioswales and other Denrick approved best management practices. Drainage from off-site is directed from the northwest to the Kent Apartments property from a ditch system along the shared Providence-Shady Dell Park property boundary. An existing swale on the Kent Apartments site currently directs stormwater to the east into the Muddy Neck Road Dell Dot drainage system. Kent Apartments will propose an upgraded open swale connection from the Shady Dell Park property line or in that area. Parallel with the Providence property boundary, extending to and outfalling into the Muddy Neck drainage system. The Muddy Neck Road open drainage design is intended for stormwater to pass under Muddy Neck Road and into an existing ditch system that generally follows the southern boundary of the Summerfield subdivision. And, you know, if I could have you just go back to that previous slide for a second. So you see where the Summerfield subdivision is, the yellow subdivision directly. There you go. Thank you. The Muddy Neck Road stormwater crossing is through an existing 24-inch culvert, which is presently filled with sediment and appears to be dysfunctional. The Kent Department's project will need to coordinate the maintenance of the drainage system culvert with DelDOT as part of the commercial entrance design process. It can be assumed that this drainage benefit will also, or maintenance will also benefit the immediate neighborhood currently draining toward Muddy Neck Road. The Kent Apartments site plan illustrates a community swimming pool and bathhouse near the intersection of Muddy Neck and Parker House Road. The pool has parking for tenants and their guests and is also connected to the interior sidewalk system, which is illustrated in that's a white string. The existing wooded fringe along the site property boundary shall be preserved to the extent possible, and we acknowledge the condition placed on this application by the Planning and Zoning Commission that requires a vegetated or forested buffer at least 10 feet wide. Buffer and interior landscaped areas will be planted in conformance with a detailed plan prepared by the project landscape architect and maintained by a qualified firm under contract to the Kent Apartments Property Management Company. The Delaware State Housing Authority, in their plus remarks, again, strongly supported the proposal to rezone the property to GR with a conditional use for a 45-unit rental community. Read to you from that excerpt from that report. It says, Kent Apartments would provide Sussex County an excellent opportunity to facilitate a more affordable housing product in the coastal resort area. The need for housing affordable to the many county residents who work in this resort economy is acute and well documented. In addition, this site is located within a Delaware State Housing Authority defined, quote, areas of opportunity, which are strong, high-value markets offering economic opportunity, high-performing schools, and supportive infrastructure that help households succeed. Unfortunately, these same areas contain little affordable housing. As a result, the Delaware State Housing Authority recommends that Sussex County embrace the opportunity to approve this proposal, permitting residents to live close to their jobs and gain access to the resources and benefits this area provides. And in conclusion, the applicant acknowledges all 15 of the conditions recommended by the Planning and Zoning Commission and will comply with each of those.
Before you sit down, Mr. Clark, as part of your presentation to the Planning Commission, you went over some of the off-site road improvements that that DLDOT was thinking it may require. I believe you had a meeting with them. If you could review those with the commission, I mean, the council.
Thank you. Actually, I missed a page of my notes there. So adequate area has been preserved around the perimeter of each of the buildings to satisfy the state fire marshal's perimeter access requirements. And of course, the driveways and sidewalks and the parking spaces and the number of parking spaces that we've illustrated meet the code requirements with additional vehicle parking spaces to accommodate guests. In this case, 90 parking spaces are required by code. This plan illustrates 116 parking spaces. There is a single commercial entrance planned on Muddy Neck Road to align with an existing subdivision street named Butler Boulevard, which is directly across the street. A meeting was scheduled with DLDOT planners at the conceptual site plan stage, and the proposed entrance was considered to be in the most appropriate location from a safety and traffic engineering perspective. DLDOT confirmed in both the plus comments and the service level evaluation request that the planned 45-unit multifamily development will not require a traffic impact study. DLDOT went on further to say that they consider the development's traffic impact to be negligible. The applicant also has included a letter from the traffic group in the supplemental data book where the professional traffic engineer has concluded the Kent Avenue apartments peak hour and daily vehicle trips will have, in their words, minimal effect on the traffic operations of both Muddy Neck Road and Parker House Road. However, DLDOT will require the developer to improve Muddy Neck Road and Parker House Road along the entire site frontage to provide 11-foot travel lanes and 8-foot shoulders on the development side of the road. DLDOT will also require the developer to dedicate a minimum of 40 feet of right-of-way from the physical center line of both roads, again on the development side of those roads. Further, DLDOT will require a 15-foot wide permanent easement along the entire property fronting both Muddy Neck Road and Parker House Road. And a shared use path or sidewalk would be required along the entire road frontage connecting with the interior pedestrian sidewalk system, and the existing utility poles will therefore need to be relocated to accommodate those new improvements. So I believe that concludes my comments. Thank you.
As I stated at the outset of my comments, there was a number of considerations that went into the preparation and filing of this application, both obviously with the county and also with the state land use office. In categorizing those considerations into three categories, just for ease of presentation, the first of those was a zoning classification and zoning consideration, as part of the zoning code that Sussex County has. The second was site-specific considerations, and the third is the statements and strategies and policies in the county's comprehensive plan. Turning back to the first of those is the zoning classification of the property itself as well as the surrounding area. Mr. Clark reviewed, and there was a prior exhibit that was on the screen that showed the zoning classifications of the adjacent properties, and of course, part of this property is already zoned GR, the zoning classification that is being sought this afternoon. And with the extension of that zoning classification to the entire property, of course, it will then all be have one zoning classification, which is desired under land use strategies, typically to have a property with one zoning classification. And if you to look at the zoning map that was on the screen previously, some of the comments that are in even the form letter talk about this being an agricultural area of Sussex County, an AR1 area of Sussex County. And while that may have been the case historically at some point in time, when you look at the zoning map, you can see that that is not presently what this area of Sussex County is. And this area of Sussex County is now GR and MR, HR, high density zoning classification. And so there's the AR is very limited along Muddy Neck Road. You can see the properties without any coloring. The white properties on there are the properties that still have the AR1 zoning designation. In addition to just looking at the overall area and the zoning of adjacent properties and the properties along Muddy Neck Road and Parker House Road, the question was whether or not the minimum bulk area and height requirements that are found in the zoning code could be met. And as you've just heard, they can be met. Another question that needed to be answered was, will the proposed buildings work with the county's building code and be able to obviously fit within the envelope on the site for those? And the answer is that they do. The GR zoning district, as council knows, provides for medium density with a conditional use available for multifamily density of up to 12 units per acre. The staff analysis that is in the online information that you have available indicates that the proposed zoning change, that part of the application, would be considered consistent with the land use, area zoning, and uses in that area, and that the proposed conditional use could be considered consistent with the land use, area zoning, and uses. So that was the first overall consideration, was what does Sussex County zoning code say about a property that's surrounded by these types of properties and these types of uses. The second analysis, which I'll spend probably even less time on because Mr. Clark just went through it in detail, is essentially the site plan analysis that goes into a project of this nature. And again, those happen through meetings with the planning and zoning staff, through meetings with the state various state agencies that have oversight through this process. And you heard some of those things, that public water and sewer are available. There's no historical features or sites likely to be on the National Register, no rare threatened or endangered species. And significant to this application, that the DLDOT response to the service level evaluation request was that no traffic impact study was required. And there's a little more detail that's provided in that supplemental document from the traffic group, and the words that are used in that letter are a minimal effect. So DLDOT has stated that it will have a negligible impact, and our traffic consultant has referred to it as a minimal impact. In addition, when you look at those reports and studies, you'll see that both of these roads are major collectors in Sussex County, and you just heard from Mr. Clark about the various off-site improvements that would be required for the entranceway, some other improvements as far as shoulders and sidewalks that will be required of the developer if the project is approved. The third level of analysis that was undertaken in the consideration of filing this application was a review of Sussex County's comprehensive plan. And specifically, I think any time a developer looks at a piece of property, again, I think these are the typical levels of analysis that they go through, but you look at the comprehensive plan and see what the future land use map says about this property and what the goals and strategies are. And I'm going to walk through some of those sections, essentially just walking through the various chapters of the comprehensive plan, beginning in section 2.3, which is a discussion about the fact that it's no secret, I don't think, to anybody that Sussex County is the fastest growing of Delaware's three counties, and how that should be handled. And in section 2.3, one of the bullet points states more affordable housing. And I'm just going to read from it. Reflecting national trends, market prices for Sussex County homes and apartments have been steadily increasing. This trend also reflects the county's popularity as a first home and second home destination. Housing cost increases will continue to put safe and decent housing out of the reach of many low and moderate income households. This will further exacerbate the county's affordable housing challenges. If you move two chapters later, you actually come to chapter 4 and section 4.4, the future land use plan. The fifth bullet point in that section states that it is based upon the following, and that is to expand affordable housing opportunities, particularly in areas near job centers and Delaware State Housing Authority areas of opportunity. And it states that more information about that is provided in Chapter 8, Housing, and we'll get to that in a minute. As you just heard from the section of the PLUS report that Mr. Clark read, this is an area of opportunity on the Delaware State Housing Authority map for this area of Sussex County. As you know, Chapter 4 discusses the structure of future land use in Sussex County and identifies seven growth areas. One of those is the coastal area, and there's several features or trends in the coastal area. One of those that it's among the most desirable locations in Sussex County for new housing. Another is that the region contains ecologically important and sensitive characteristics. It goes on to state that the challenge in this area is to safeguard the genuine natural areas and mitigate roadway congestion without stifling tourism and real estate markets, which provide many jobs, create business for local entrepreneurs, and help keep the local tax rates low. As with most of the sections in the comprehensive plan, there's guidelines, there's strategies, and part of the guidelines in Chapter 4 talk about permitted uses, and within the coastal area. And the permitted uses within the coastal area include a range of housing types. State that a range of housing types should be permitted in coastal areas, including single-family homes, townhomes, and multifamily units, of course, which is this afternoon's application. For the coastal area, it also describes densities and what densities would be appropriate. And it states medium and higher density could be supported in areas where there is central water and sewer, near sufficient commercial uses and employment centers, where it is in keeping with the character of the areas, where it is along a main road or at or near a major intersection, where there is adequate level of service. And when you heard the description and the site plan specific details that Mr. Clark just went through, you can see how this application checks almost each one of those characteristics for medium and higher density, as it is, there is central and water and sewer available. So each one of those characteristics is met for this property. Mr. Clark also identified that this is within a level two, investment level two area on the state strategies maps. And that level, when you read in the state strategies policies, provides for the various types of housing, variety of housing options being available in a level two area. The last chapter to discuss here is the housing chapter, which is chapter 8. And section 8.1 begins with an overview. And almost right at the outset of that section, it states that most housing, particularly on the eastern side of the county, is new and often unaffordable to low-income families, seasonal employees, entry-level workers, or recent college graduates. The vision for this property is that it would be appealing to, in particular, entry-level workers and recent college graduates, that a traveling nurse, a new a police enforcement officer, a teacher who just graduated and was going to teach in the school district, those individuals who may not be seeking opportunities to buy a home or rent a full-size home would have an option available to them in order to have housing in the immediate area. The section 8 point, or chapter 8 of this comprehensive plan goes on to state in section 8.2.1, it talks about how the strong demand for housing has, particularly on the eastern side of the county, has driven up prices, and goes on to state that the shortage of affordable housing remains a very real problem for low to moderate income households in Sussex County, including many with full-time year-round jobs. Again, those are the individuals that Gulfstream hopes would take advantage of this apartment opportunity. The goals and strategies and objectives in section 8.2, one of those, specifically 8.2, states that the goal in this housing chapter is to ensure that a diversity of housing opportunities are available to meet the needs of residents of different ages, income levels, abilities, national origins, and household configurations. All of those considerations, again, the compatibility with what's described in the county's zoning code, the site-specific concerns, as well as, of course, the outline that's set forth in the comprehensive plan and the guidance that's provided within the coastal areas for the future land use map, are the things that assisted the applicant in putting this application together. And in addition to that, sort of a fourth factor, and there's no science to this last factor, but there's a simple eye test as far as compatibility goes. And what does it look like in the area? And probably the best depiction of that was the site plan itself. But to know in general what these buildings would look like on the site, you don't need to look any further really than what's adjacent to this property. As you heard when Mr. Clark reviewed the size of the buildings, they're very similar in size and nature to those buildings. They're actually a little shorter, a few feet shorter than the overall length of the buildings within that community. And so that's, I would call, the simple eye test as far as compatibility, to say that there's nothing like it in the area. There's actually something that's very similar to it that is immediately adjacent to the site. That eye test was confirmed. The applicant retained an appraiser to determine what the impact might be of this housing option. Again, that was included in the materials that Ms. Cornwell referenced at the outset, and that's the Monahan Group LLC, which many of you may know as Tidewater Properties. And Mr. Monahan stated that accordingly, it is my professional opinion that the proposed apartment project will have no negative impact on surrounding property values. And again, the applicant believes that's a confirmation of that simple eye test, my unscientific eye test, that it's similar to what is in the area. There are other housing, multifamily structures that are in the area. At the beginning of my comments, I indicated that I was going to address some of the comments that are set forth in the form letter that was referenced and has been signed. It sounded like there were over 1,000 signatures of that for this meeting. The first paragraph of that letter states that a 45-unit apartment campus does not fit the makeup of this area. This property is surrounded by single-family homes and townhomes. And I would say the opposite is actually what is in the area. The area is a residential area, and residential uses consist of both single-family homes and multifamily structures, and whether that multifamily structure is a townhouse or it is an apartment, it is still a multifamily structure. As you heard from the comments about the area, if you, of course, have other business uses, this is very close to the town of Ocean View, and so it does have a proximity to a town center. And the county, as you've just heard from some of the excerpts from the comprehensive plan, as well as the Delaware State strategies, have made it clear that affordable housing in eastern Sussex County, in a beach area such as this, is a priority. The second paragraph of that letter is a general discussion about the protection afforded by zoning laws and concludes basically that a zoning change is not in their best interest. As you just saw from the sections of the comprehensive plan that were walked through, the plan calls for looking for opportunities where multifamily projects are appropriate, even if within the coastal areas, which is what this project would accomplish. A property such as this is located, as I mentioned a moment ago, just outside of a town center. There's adequate public facilities, as you heard and have seen in the exhibit notebook. There are many employment opportunities in this immediate vicinity. And that is why the comprehensive plan and zoning code indicate that this is an ideal location for this type of a project. The next section of that form letter talks about overdevelopment and traffic problems. Again, to beat the dead horse, again, this is a coastal area and there are higher densities allowed within that on the future land use map. There are commercial business uses nearby. And probably more importantly and most importantly, are the response from DLDOT in the service level evaluation response, as well as the response from the traffic group describing that the traffic would be negligible or minimal. The next section of the letter states that Gulfstream purchased the land knowing that it was zoned AR1 and that it should not have any expectation that a higher density or different zoning classification would fit in the surrounding area. As I said earlier, it is likely that most of this land, if not all of it, was zoned AR1 at some time in the past. But that is not, if you were to zoom out and look at an image of this, that is not how the property has been developed over time, which is recognized by that zoning map that was previously on the screen. You can see the various zoning classifications that are there. And this is not an AR1 area of Sussex County any longer. One of the reasons that this also is an ideal project to help provide another housing option in this eastern area of Sussex County is that, as you saw when in the section of the comprehensive plan that talked about the coastal area as a growth area, it talked about the ecological concerns that are typical in this area. And of course, that's inherent in the name coastal area. Those are often some of the more sensitive areas of Sussex County. And that's one of the advantages to this site, and one of the reasons why these applications were filed, is those ecological sensitivities do not exist on this site as they do on sites that are adjacent to some of the marshes and other wetlands that act to help with these ecological sensitivities. And then again, is further demonstration of how this plan fits neatly within the county's comprehensive plan and achieving finding an opportunity to provide a greater level of density. In short, the generalized concerns that are in that form letter to stop growth in this area are simply not consistent with the most recently adopted comprehensive plan. Frankly, if you went back and looked at the prior version of the comprehensive plan, it had similar goals and strategies for this area. So it's not just the current comprehensive plan. The prior iterations of that plan had the same mindset in this area. As you know, the coastal area is largely what was formerly known as the Environmentally Sensitive District Overlay Zone, which again was one of Sussex County's growth areas. So that has not changed in the most recent adoption of an amendment to the comprehensive plan. Gulfstream's goal is to provide a housing option that is more affordable than buying a home or perhaps even renting an entire single family home. I suspect that almost everyone here in this room has resided in an apartment at some point in their life. I know that during college, during law school, and for a short time after law school, I resided in an apartment and was glad that there were options available for me to not have to go out and try to purchase a home or rent a home, but to simply have this housing option available. And again, I don't think that my life experience is unique in that regard. And in fact, I would say that it probably reflects the majority of people's life experience. I hope that our presentation this afternoon has helped to illustrate that the application wasn't randomly filed or filed on a whim or lightly taken as all of these considerations were being considered by the applicant and Mr. Clark, Mr. Coben, and myself. But again, using the zoning tools that the county has provided, both the zoning code and the comprehensive plan, the application was prepared and filed, and Gulfstream would ask Council to adopt the recommendation of the Planning Commission, approving the change of zone request and the conditional use with the conditions that Planning Commission recommended. And with that, that concludes my presentation, and myself and the rest of the team up here are certainly ready and able to answer any questions that council members may have.
Questions?
Yes.
Mr. Hudson?
Well, my first question is kind of toward Ms. Cornwell, but I see this is already, the answer is already given up here. So I want to know what the immediate zonings around that area are. And I have a follow-up question, but you probably don't have the answer to this yet about that, is when or approximately what year these zones were changed, and I'll find that out. But
so standing here, I could not answer that.
That's kind of what I thought, yeah. Now the DLDOT's position that the traffic would be negligible, right?
Correct. That was their service level response.
Now, can you go to their drawing, please, to their, like, where the roadway, the picture of the roadway. That white, I'm not sure what that is. Is that the multimodal path as depicted there? Is that what that is?
Yes.
Now, going into the entrance, will you guys be required to do a right turn deceleration lane and a left turn lane in there, or don't you know yet?
I'm going to ask Mr. Clark to respond to that. He dealt directly with DLDOT. Do you?
If you're coming south, what I mean, would it be a right? Would you be required to do a right turn lane, which is deceleration, and a left turn lane going north?
We've not made the application, and we're not really that far along in the process yet to know the precise, you know, exactly what they're going to have us do in terms of improvements.
Okay, and you might want to stay right there.
Sure.
Stormwater management.
Yes.
You guys talked about the one ditch that runs kind of east and west there.
Yes.
Is that ditch clogged, or is it? I walked that property, and it's not much of a ditch.
Not much of a ditch on our property, but the vision will be that we will capture stormwater in that ditch and direct it towards Muddy Neck. I think the real problem is that Muddy Neck's DLDOT drainage system has completely failed because it's silted in.
I get it, yeah.
And you can count on DLDOT looking to us to pay to have that cleaned up as part of our entrance permit process. And then,
okay.
And I think everybody in that this drain into that system now is going to see some real benefit.
Okay, and there was one spot you talked about clogged. It was a 24-inch pipe.
Yeah.
Can you tell me where that is?
If we go back to the other exhibit, I'll show you.
Again.
General, the 24-inch pipes that carries quite a bit of.
Yes. Okay. All right. Now, the pervious surfaces that you talked about, are they asphalt or concrete or a little bit of both, or how's that work?
Typically, we use asphalt for projects that have been done in the county or pervious paved with asphalt products.
Okay. Now, through time, do they become clogged or anything? Can you answer that? I don't know.
So DENREC has a practice in their regulations for maintaining this. So when you have an approval for pervious pavements, it comes with it a requirement to maintain it on a regular basis.
To keep it pervious?
And they're very specific as to how that's done.
Okay.
Most of which is just regular flushing it out. Sand does get trapped in there and affect it a little bit. But they oversee that, Mr. Hudson.
Okay. Thank you. I know I've heard this and I've read it, but I want to hear it directly. This is not low income or workforce or affordable housing, and is it tied to AMI, which is the average mean income? You guys know that.
Correct. I tried not to use the word affordable in my presentation as little as possible, as it seemed to cause great consternation at the Planning Commission level, but it is the ideal word to describe this. But it is what is being proposed by the applicant is not part of a program, that the program that you're referring to that's in the county code. Mr. Harris's goal is to have these units be priced at the median level for an apartment. At the Planning Commission, that those amounts that he had were for a two-bedroom unit were $987, and for a three-bedroom unit was $1,347 unit. But it is not part of the county's affordable housing program. It is But we hope that it's an affordable option for individuals, and it's hard to get around the word affordable without mixing those two, but it is not low-income housing, and it is intended, again, for those entry-level workers, again, a lot of your year-round workers that are looking for an opportunity for an apartment style of housing as opposed to a full house or town.
I just wanted to make sure that the context of affordable was proper, was understood and meant in the correct way.
And I think there was some consternation about that at the Planning Commission hearing, which is why I was trying to avoid that word this afternoon. But it is the most ideal word to describe the benefit of this, is that it's another affordable housing option, but it is not affordable housing as in part of the county's program where there's a certain number of units designated and you have to file all of the paperwork that goes with that and keep track of all of those other details that are in the county code.
Okay. Sorry to ask so much, but the design of the buildings, is that at all in any kind of stage, or can you explain what the roof pitch might look like or anything like that? Were there flat top roofs or?
They have not been designed.
Okay.
But we have a height requirement that's set by the county.
Yeah.
And the general bulk is, as we've said in the record, that.
Okay. One question is, there's a little teeny tail end of that property that's already zoned GR. Is there a reason for that?
I think there is. I think that there was, you can envision a property line here, Mr. Hudson.
Uh-huh.
At one point in time, that was owned by another party. That party developed Shady Dale Park.
Yes.
And so it's likely that at that time, that was part of the zoning application that was accompanying Shady Dale Park. He later sold that and became combined into one tract.
Okay, now is Dogwood Lane there or Dogwood Drive, is that part of Shady Dale? Because you can't get into Shady Dale from that road, but I was wondering if that's part of that complex.
It's a question I can't answer. It is GR zoned, but whether it's part of their HOA and community.
That's where I was going with that.
I don't know the answer to that.
It is. Okay. It is part of Shady Dale.
All right. Taking a lot of notes. I have nothing further at this time.
If I could answer, I apologize. Mr. Hudson had a question about ages of developments. The reserves was within the last, 10, 15 years. Shady Dale goes back to the 1980s, so that's been zoned GR for a while. That's fine, understood. It goes back a while.
I will remind you, please, we don't want to hear from the audience until it's your turn to speak up here. Okay? Thank you very much.
Summerfield goes back to 2002 and Providence goes back to 2002 as to when they were recorded. So those actually go back a little bit farther for review and approval, but they were recorded in 2002.
Okay, what about Doug Nelson's funeral home?
That's been zoned B1 for a while.
And it's been a long time.
Yes. Okay. I don't have a date as to when that was rezoned.
Okay, thank you.
Questions?
Yeah.
Mr. Riley.
Councilman Hudson and I were tracking along the same lines for the most part. He asked a lot of the questions I had, but did I hear you right that the pervious surface is actually asphalt?
That's what is thought that will be used is pervious asphalt. There's generally pervious asphalt and pervious concrete are probably the two most typical.
So the water goes through that, doesn't
yes, sir.
Shut off?
Yes, it does.
But the balance of water coming onto the property will be running off into the ditch.
Quite a bit of the water coming onto the property now. Our property in the landscape actually sits lower than the surrounding properties if you look at the topography map.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to capture that, and much of that will leave the site by the swale we're talking about. The rest of it is managed through a column of stone that's under that pavement. That is the pervious pavement design. Mm-hmm. So it's really, as you said, the water passes immediately through the pavement, whether it's concrete or asphalt, into that stone column, and that's where it's stored and managed.
So it goes into the swale and then theoretically would go through the culvert, but the culvert's currently blocked.
Correct. That's the eventual outfall will be through that.
And then it would go into Muddy Branch, which, frankly, I get complaints from people who live further downstream on Muddy Branch about the quality of the water.
It'll go east.
Correct. So it would be heading down towards the...
Savannah's Landing in that direction.
Right, yeah. Right, so we'd be adding more runoff into that branch.
Actually, I don't know that we are allowed to add more runoff to the stormwater.
We have to manage to the pre-developed rate of runoff, that's correct.
So you wouldn't be adding anything?
That's correct.
And Mr. Coben can, I mean, he's our engineer and he could speak to that, but my general layman's understanding of the engineering on that is that we can have more water leaving the site post-development than does in its current
condition. Which is what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. And Mr. Riley, if you wanted to see some great pervious paving, the City of Rehoboth Beach is new City Hall. All the parking places are pervious paving.
Is it?
Yes, if you happen to be in Rehoboth, it's all pervious paving that surrounds there.
Okay. And I guess around the question of affordable housing, I guess the public may or may not know this, but the definition of affordable housing for homes actually goes up to $240,000. So by some measures, that's a lot of people would not consider that affordable, but that falls within the range of what we consider affordable housing. So these market rates don't seem like they're out of line with that. So I think that's all the question I have, because as I said, Councilman Hudson was tracking along the same thought line, and that's all I've got.
Any questions? More.
Okay, thank you. You've completed your presentation?
We have.
Okay, is there anyone else here today that would like to speak in favor?